hello. Welcome back or welcome to the Life Without Limits podcast. I'm your host, Yogi Roth. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the comments. As always, keep them coming. Review, share it, tell your friends about it. And if you got ways we can improve, I'm coachable. Let me know. Pass them along. I'm always down for new ideas and new guests and new ways to make this thing enjoyable for all of you as we continue to explore the fundamental question on the Life Without Limits podcast, which is, what does it mean to be human? Now, this podcast is coming to you from the heart of Tel Aviv. We are on the beach in Israel, and you all know me well enough now, and if you don't, I love to travel. We've done a couple international podcasts from Venice, Italy, from Croatia. We did a spoken word poem on the park in London, and most recently we were on a moving glacier in Iceland about a month and a half ago, having a really fun conversation in season two of this podcast. And we are in Israel, in the heart of it, in Tel Aviv, feet in the sand for this conversation. And it's with somebody who I think is going to light you up, regardless of who you are, where you're from, what your background is. Kati Cohen is simply an inspiration. She's hard to describe, and I love that because I think I kind of live in that world too. She really never will allow herself to get put into a box, and she's always just chased what her passions are. And for her and I to get together this week has been amazing. She's been my co-host. I've been her co-host. As we've done some work with a really cool nonprofit in Israel called Israel 21C. That will be linked in the blog post. And we've done a lot of fun things. Number one, we've explored American football in Israel, and it is massive. You'll see the videos. Not only are they inspiring because of the stories of so many young men from Israel or people that have moved to Israel, fell in love with this game, but there's also women who have fallen in love with football as we got to explore the female flag football league here in Israel and really how this game can transcend. And you all know how I feel. We all speak ball, and there is a beautiful power of play all over the world, regardless of what you believe in or where you're from or your background, the color of your skin, your gender, and I love that. And that's been really fun to work with Kati on. Also, she is an artist in every element of that word. She loves getting uncomfortable, so much so that she literally can eat fire. She does fire dancing. So for all of you that are into Burning Man or Midburn, which is an element or a version of Burning Man in I think over 50-60 countries around the world, she is a huge part of that. She also drops into anything and everything uncomfortable, such as acro yoga. I mean, I got to see her perform and it was wild. So we dive into that. But also I'm here because I'm here on a personal note, and I'm going to do another podcast after this episode about exploring where my mom is from. Many of you have supported the documentary film Life in a Walk, which explored the relationship with my dad and I as we walked the Camino de Santiago throughout Portugal and Spain. Now I'm in the area where my mom was born. She was born in Haifa. It's a seaport town that I've never been to, and I can't wait to explore what it's all about. I got three pictures and a birth certificate, and we're going to see what can happen. So we'll be exploring that in the next podcast from Israel. But this one will light you up. Kati, she says it early on, she is thirsty for the world and really dropping into uncomfortable situations, and that is her. She's lived all across the globe. She was born in Israel, moved to Australia, said she never really felt comfortable there, and at 19, all of a sudden the urge to go was loud. And a lot of us have felt that. And a lot of people I talk to feel that urge to go, but there's a fear there that isn't embraced. And Kati's, her knowledge, her wisdom, and her experiences, I think you're going to get anyone out there who needs a subtle nudge to go live the life that they dream, live the life that they dream to paint on the blank canvas that we all get to have whenever we choose to, you're going to get impacted. She's lived in Malaysia. She lives in Bali. She lived in an island off of Singapore. She lived in the Maldives. She lived in Buenos Aires in Argentina. I mean, she's lived there, not just gone on a couple weeks or a month vacation, but over a year in all those places. And now she's back full circle in Israel in a place that she calls home. And her and I got to do a lot of amazing things from explore football. She took me to Shabbat dinner at her family's house. We got to see the power of play in this beautiful country. And it's been really special. So I think you're going to settle in and get impacted, get inspired. If your computer is open during this one, I bet you'll be booking a flight. I mean, she really does provide the nudge that we hope to bring on the Life Without Limits podcast. So I'm going to get out of the way, and I want you to make sure you listen to somebody who describes what it means to be human. She goes, it's who you are, without any mask. And I think that is the perfect way to introduce this conversation from the beach, our feet in the sand, in Tel Aviv. Here is Kati Cohen. All right, here we are, right in the middle of Tel Aviv, literally feet in the sand, and joined by a very special guest, Kati Cohen.
Hi, everybody.
Welcome to the Life Without Limits podcast.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Great being here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So paint a picture for where we are right now for the listeners.
Painting a picture. It's a beautiful sunny day, a little bit of wind. We're right on the beach in the center of Tel Aviv, just between Tel Aviv and Yafo. And it's beautiful. There's heaps of people. The sand is super white and the water is just turquoise. It's gorgeous.
It is. And you can hear the sounds in the background. We got people playing basically paddleball, but it's not called that over here.
Yeah, it's called matkot.
Matkot, which is like paddleball.
It's the bane of my existence. It's horrible.
It's like the most
They need
intense.
To stop.
So we got that happening. We got a guy singing something over our shoulder. We got kids running around.
I think it's in Spanish.
Yeah.
Something in Spanish.
We got all the languages happening.
Today. All the languages.
Speaking of, you can speak multiple languages. 4 total?
Yes. But yes.
All right. So we're going to get into that. All right. So in the intro, I explained who you are and how we met. But one of my 2 rules on this podcast is, one, I only ask questions I don't know the answer to.
Okay.
And 2, I always like to make it a little awkward off the top. So we both get share our memory of how we met. You know,
okay.
What's your first recollection of that? And then I'll say mine.
How we met virtually or how we met?
It's your call. This is the awkwardness.
My recollection. I open my computer and I dial into my, this is a plug into appear.in. So I plug in, I click into the room where we have the chat with Jonathan and Chaim, our director. And Yogi's there. Oh, hi. And I'm like, wow, look at this good looking boy. How you doing? And we just started chatting. That's my recollection.
That's a good recollection. My first one, I'll go to the physical. And we landed in Tel Aviv, flew for, you know, felt like a day or so. And you're at the hotel that we're meeting up in, mm-hmm. and it's Jonathan, our mutual friend, you and me. And I think when you first meet people, you have a vibe, right? Especially if you've traveled around the world. And the instant vibe from you was just an incredible warmth.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, this is going to be good. And we didn't know. I mean, we both kind of signed up for this. We're going to kind of go host some travel content here in Israel. Not really sure what's going to happen. But within that, everybody has depth to them, a story to them, and yours is as good as anybody's I've ever been around. So I'm curious.
Stop, okay. Okay, continue.
Okay, continue.
Okay, stop.
I'm curious, how would you describe yourself?
How would I describe myself? Wow. It's like something my therapist would ask me. And let's start working on that. How would I describe myself? I'm open. I love life. I love just meeting new people, trying new things. I have absolutely no shame, which helps with a lot of it. So, and I'm just me. I just be me.
Just being me for you has been pretty unique of a path if you compared it to the general population.
Yeah, I've always kind of just gone and done what I wanted and not really seen the fear behind doing something that you haven't tried before. Shall we wait for this airplane to pass?
Good. Let's get
it's
a little
good?
Ambiance.
All right.
Yeah, yeah. We're good.
So I just always kind of went, okay, I want to try this, and it scares the shit out of me, so that's why I want to try it even more. Or I don't really think about that, and I just kind of, okay, now I want to go and do that, and I just go and do it. But I think it comes also from the way that I was brought up, and it comes from the people that I chose to surround myself with. And I'm just thirsty for the world. I'm just so thirsty for just trying everything and just enriching myself with everything that it has to offer.
When was the first time you felt the desire for that thirst? Like, when did you have to quench it? Was it as a child?
I'll tell you, I think it was because when I was 13, just before I turned 13, my parents moved us from Israel to Australia, and it was a place where I didn't know the people, didn't know anyone, didn't know the culture, didn't know the language, didn't know nothing about the place. And I kind of just had to go there and be like a chameleon, just like make myself fit into the mold and speak the language and fit into with the people and, you know, just try to live and be. And it was really hard for the first few months because I didn't speak the language and I kind of just started imagining people speaking Hebrew around me. Just people coming up to me and started speaking Hebrew. That does not happen on the Gold Coast in Australia. And then I think that I just, from then on, I think around possibly the age of 19, I just went, okay, I need to leave. I need to do this. I need to go and experience that thing again, and just kept looking for that whole experience of going somewhere, not knowing anyone, not knowing their culture, not knowing the language, and just finding my feet.
Was it the fear that drove you, like this, an excitement in that? Like, you know, we've had a phrase in this podcast before, like feel the fear and do it anyway.
I don't think that I think that because it happened in such a transformative age, like at 13, you're just learning about yourself. You're just learning who you are. You're just trying to kind of figure yourself out. I think because it happened in such a young age, and I that fear kind of just went. It turned from fear to excitement. It turned from fear to an adventure.
So when you're 19, where did you want that next adventure? Like, how did you choose that next one?
Well, I went with my parents on holiday to Club Med in Lindeman Island, which is an island off the Whitsundays. And I went there and I'm like, wow, there's people from Brazil, and there's people from Japan, and there's people from Korea, and there's people from all these different places, and they're all having fun, they're all my age. And it's just like, okay, this is crazy. I'm going to talk to some people about this. And like, yeah, well, I'm here for 6 months and then I'm going over. And before here, I was in Malaysia, and before here, I was in Thailand. And wow, like, okay, this is where I want to be. and I just went up to the general manager of the hotel. They're called Chiefs Village, Chief okay. Village, Chef de Village in French. And his name was Ryan. He's American. He's one of my best chiefs. And I said to him, listen, this old 19-year-old chick coming up to him, and he's like, so listen, I want to be GO, so what do I need to do? And he's like, what do you want to do? I said, I don't know. Do you tell me what do you need? And he's like, I need a receptionist. Right, where do I go? And I was back there 2 weeks later working. And then I was 7 years in that company, like just traveling around.
So
it's pretty cool.
Give us a list of some of the places that you bounced around in that 7 years.
I've been to Malaysia, Indonesia. In Indonesia, I was in Bali and in an island just off Singapore called Bintan. And Thailand, I was in Phuket. And the Maldives, I was in an island called Kani.
And these aren't just so everybody's aware, this isn't just like a holiday. This is like you went and lived there.
No, I lived there. Yeah, I lived there for all of them pretty much. I lived there for a year or more.
Is it, did it get to the point, or was it instant where you're like, okay, I feel really comfortable dropping into someplace new where I don't know anybody?
Yeah, it got to a point where I was getting to a year and I just needed a change. I just needed, okay, yep. So, what's next? And after I decided to finish Club Med and everything, I started studying and back in Australia, and even that was super hard, and I did a couple of exchange programs to different countries, and then decided to go and live in South America. So I lived in South America for 2 years, and then I went back home. Now I live in Israel. So it's kind of like,
it's fascinating. Yeah, you've bounced
so
around.
So much to do. Well, so little time.
Well, let's dive into that, because I think we've all met friends, and you know, you've lived all over the world, specifically in the West. You know, if you say the U.S. or Western countries, it's often stated, I think, I want to travel, but I just can't. Mm. And I want to see the world, but I got to go to school, I got to get a job, and then I got to get married, and then
excuses.
I got a house, and then I got to, well, excuses, programs, whatever it may be. Curious how you buck those. You know, because you got into a year and you probably felt pretty comfortable in all those places.
I think it's the comfort that made me scared. It's like, I'm not growing, I'm not moving, I'm not going anywhere. It's kind of like, okay, I need to go enrich my soul again.
How are you aware of that?
To be honest, you kind of feel that you're getting into a routine that you... I think in the morning, like, I'd have a vision. Is it still going?
Yeah, we're still going.
In the morning, I'd like be walking the same route I would go to the office or to whatever activity I was doing, and it would get to a point where I would just go, I don't see myself doing this routine. It's really weird.
Mm.
But like visualizing it, I just knew that I was just, okay, I can't see myself doing this route anymore. I need to leave. I don't know if it's mental. I don't know if it's something physical. I don't know if it's something, but it's just, that's how it was for me. And I was like, okay, yep, time to go.
Now, have you analyzed that? Have you tried to look back on it? Or have you just been like, no, it's just what I feel?
No, I have. I have. I think that... You know, it's a journey. There's a lot of things that happen in our life that is quite powerful and meaningful that you need to go back and look at, because it then writes the rest of your story or sort of hinders your story as well. These different, shall we say, life events that happen, and that you keep investing in energy into without knowing. So all of those things that happened have happened for me to learn some kind of thing, for me to move forward, to be in the spot where I am today. So if I'm going back and analyzing those events of me leaving places and going to another place, or feeling like I've kind of done with that place and moving on, sometimes it may have been to, let's say, run away from something, or it would have been to just because I needed a change. But it was never something that I was like, okay, I feel bad here. It wasn't something that I was like, no, I'm really suffering. It was more like, I really like it here, but I'm out.
Are you the type of person that finishes your plate? Or are you the kind of person that's like, all right, give me a couple of bites of here, and then I want to try a couple of bites of this, and then a couple more bites of that?
Well, living in Club Med, you eat from a buffet every single every single day. So I was always trying a bit of everything. I'm a bit of everything, definitely. But if I come from a house that's, you know, my mom's mom, she was in the Holocaust. So the food has always been like a big thing. So, you know, when you don't finish from your plate, you're like, no, you have to finish. Or you have to finish. Oh, there's not enough food. But since we moved to Australia, then it just kind of all went out the door. So it's always like, okay, now I'm kind of, I want to try everything, but I don't finish. So I'm kind of like, no, but I'm done.
What does comfortable look like for you?
When I'm most uncomfortable.
Mm.
Yeah.
And describe that, because I'm sure there's a lot of, specifically even like females that are like, oh, uncomfortable traveling alone. I don't know how, you know, there's a fear to that. You clearly don't feel that. But maybe you have, I don't know. But what is that? Take us a layer deeper into being comfortable, being uncomfortable.
I'll give you the latest, the latest thing. I always saw people doing like aerial stuff, you know, the kind of circus. And I always said to myself, oh, I'm too big, or my body's not right, I'm not flexible enough, I'm not this, I'm not that. And then one day I went, okay, well, I'm the only one that's saying that to myself.
Mm.
So I might just, you know, not give a damn, just go and do it anyway. And that made, you know, going to a class with, or going to somewhere where you sit there and you're like, everyone else is so good and you are nothing. I couldn't even do a push-up or like lift myself up on the silks. But I didn't care. I was like, no, okay, this is a decision that I made. I need to put myself in the most uncomfortable position where I feel the most awkward, the most looked at, the most judged, and I need to be okay with that. Because that's the only way where I'm going to grow and get past it and face it and then just be able to do it. And so recently I just put myself in a couple of shows when I never even performed. And I'm like, here I am performing in front of 1,500 people today. And I'm like, you know what? If I'm going to put myself in that position, that means I'm going to have to train super hard. So that motivated me to train. It kind of goes backwards.
Mm. It's because you have this grit to you that's really, really cool. You know, to be transparent, I got to see that performance, which we're going to dive into a little bit, and she absolutely crushes it. That was insane. I was kind of scared for you, like, wow, this is badass. But on that note, you're comfortable being uncomfortable, and we've kind of dove into that. But I'm really curious about when things get hard for you. You know, you have this backbone of work ethic. You know, it's not like you're just gallivanting around on somebody else's dime and you're traveling over the world living this luxurious life.
Yeah.
And I'm curious as you've gotten older, not that you're old, but as you've gotten older, is it like, man, I just kind of want that comfortable thing again? You know, do you feel that, or was it, no, let me just dig in now, because when life presents me with another opportunity/challenge, like, this is when I have that Holocausty grit that is in my blood that I know I can fight with.
I think that people most of the time associate comfortable with money or with things, and that was, you know, a lot of the times when I felt, when I wasn't okay, or when I was feeling a bit stressed, or when I was feeling a bit, oh shit, what am I going to do with my life, was when I was in situations where I was like, okay, I'm going from dollar, you know, counting the pennies, counting the cents, counting the coins, however way you say it.
That's good.
Over there. And then I realized that money is not what makes you comfortable. Money will always be there. There is an abundance. You need to see it as a vessel to get what you want and what makes you happy instead of the thing that you want. And by thinking that, it's kind of always brought me opportunities that have made me so, like, they just have given me what I needed. So that's where I feel comfortable, because if I do have the hard, you know, the hardcore, and I'm like, oh my God, I can't do this, I can't handle it, I've always got my family, which is amazing. That's my backbone. They're amazing. They're all over the world, and we're spread out, and doesn't matter, we're still as close as a family can be, and super supportive. And I always have them, and I always have a really good bunch of friends to support me along the way. But yeah, everything comes from within. You have to find the comfort, and you have to find the peace within, and you can't keep looking for it outside. The moment you realize that you have full control over your decisions and what happens and your reality, then all the rest of the stuff kind of fades away, all the fears and all the other, for me anyway. You just have to understand it. You just have to find it. You have to stop looking outside of yourself for answers. He's going to send me a message so that I'm happy because he sent me a message. No, I'm going to be happy. And if I get a message, then it's a bonus. You know, it's just an example. But you have to stop looking for outside and blaming outside of yourself and try to find the answers from within. I just went a bit deep there. No, sorry. Philosophical there.
Therapist on me. What? When was that moment for you? Did you have one?
Yeah, I was... I think it was when I decided to come home from Argentina.
When is this? Like, how old are you?
It was...
How many times have you traveled already? Like, what country is this in that you're living?
Okay. Wait. This was in 2014. I came back.
And you've been living there?
And I was living there for 2 years. And I loved it so much. Buenos Aires is like Tel Aviv with no beach, and that was the issue. I needed a beach, so I was like, okay, I love you, but peace. I need my ocean. So, but in that moment, I was kind of confused. I think the confusion out of everything is the most grueling and scary. Confusion. What am I going to do now? What am I going to do? I could do this, or I could do that, or maybe I could do this. But what if I do this and then I can't do that? Or what if so many opportunities, so many things, so many choices. Everything is, it's, you're blessed on one side, but it's super frustrating on the other side because you don't know what you want to do. And I realized at that moment, I was like, okay, I'm gonna go home. I was in Australia. And I was jet lagged for like 2 months because I just refused to believe I was back in Australia. Like, God love you, Australia, but you're kind of not for me. But I just, in that moment, I was like, right, I need to, there's got to be a better way. There's got to be a better way to live, or there's got to be a better way to wake up in every morning. And so I went, and I'm the only one that can make that decision. And I went and got help. I went and found my most amazing coach in the world. And that's when, I started seeing things from different perspectives, and I started reading, and I started doing a lot of self-development with Jim Rowan and all the greats, and Og Mandino, which my dog is named after.
Oh, uh-huh. I didn't know that.
Augustine Mandino, baby. The great Og Mandino. And I just started listening to heaps of audiobooks in my car instead of listening to the radio. I was just like on audiobooks all the time, and just mindset. And it just brought me on this massive journey that I ended up working in a startup and ended up investing in it, because I was like, I'm not going to work for someone if I'm not going to get money when they do an exit, you know? And I was just, all these things that, you know, just changed completely my perspective on life.
And that was all in Australia.
It started there. It's a lifetime journey.
Well said.
So.
And then you found yourself back here.
And I found myself back here.
Not on the traditional roadmap.
No.
Of Kati.
No.
If we had to plan it out, right?
Right.
We talked a little bit about it prior to the podcast, so I don't want to ask it again, but I am curious, when you found yourself back here, was there the uncomfortableness that is comfortable, or what was it? And if so, are you missing that?
No. It was weird. Because in every single place I've traveled to, I felt a stranger, and that I was discovering, and that I was learning, or I never really felt like I was part of that place, or it was home. And when I came here, it was home. It was straight up home. I never felt at home in Australia, and I was there for God knows how many years. And I came here, and it was like, yep, all right, I'm here. This feels right. This feels right to me. And then everything else came. The Midburn and the community and all the volunteering that I do and all those people and the projects and friends and just everything just came along, and every single thing is just amazing. I'm enjoying it so much.
Yeah, you can tell. You have a glow about you.
Sometimes though, when you get on the bus or taxi and start yelling at people, talk to freaking government officers, then that's a different story.
Right, that's a different story.
That's a different story.
That side of you.
You don't want to see that side of me. I get on the phone with those guys, man, I can get scary.
All right. Well,
the Israeli comes out.
Okay, hey, I got an Israeli mom, so I want to go there next. What is it like to be the grandchild of Holocaust survivors?
It humbles you.
In what way?
Because the more you go like, oh, I have an issue with my life, and oh my God, and my car, I got to move it because I got a ticket, and the food wasn't that good at that restaurant. And you're like, and you go back and you reevaluate, and you think, you know, you go on Friday night dinner, and your grandma tells you like a story from way back when, and you're like, holy shit, that puts stuff in perspective. And then it just makes you so grateful for what you have, and the family that you have around you. And I have a look at them, and it was like, they were adamant to build an empire, you know. My grandpa and my grandma, they were like, we're gonna build an empire, and we're gonna have kids, and they were going to keep the tradition, and we're going to keep the family together and united, and you know, and that, I think that comes a lot from what happened in the Holocaust, to keep the family together.
Do you recall the first time you heard their story, and can you share that with us about their path?
My grandma is really, she doesn't like to talk about it. She almost never, she pretty much never talks about it. My grandma's really like put it way deep in some cell inside her, and you can actually, she's an artist, and you can see the pain like coming out in her paintings. They're really, not that they're dark, but they're so emotional. Mm. You see her paintings. And I remember one day my brother's ex-girlfriend was here, and we were all just going shopping for something at some shopping center. And suddenly she just kind of goes, yeah, and we were staying in a button shop, and the person that owned the button shop used to hide us in the button cabinets, in the display cabinets. And then she started telling the story about her mom, how she was in the working camp making uniforms, and how she made friends with the Nazi lady, who then told them, okay, they're coming to destroy you tomorrow, so go to my place. And she just... We just sat there parked in the car in the parking lot and at some random shopping center. And me, my sister, and then my brother's ex-girlfriend were all just crying, going, oh, what the hell is this? And my grandma's like, yeah, and this is what happened, this is what happened, this is what happened. We're like, you never said this to us before, ever, ever. And it was just... I was like, whoa. And she never really spoke about it again.
Wow.
I think my mom got a bit more of the story out of it, but my mom, like, she looks for it. It's just like, tell us.
And clearly it's important, but what's the importance level for you to hold on or learn those stories to pass them on? Or is that prevalent? Is it minimal?
It's super important. It's a part of our history. History is important. It's shaped who we are today. It's shaped where we are today, Trump or not, and it's important to keep it. It's important to tell the story. I think in Israel it's really quite, you know, that you have one day a year where you really tell the stories of everyone, and the next it ends in this gen, you know, in my grandma's generation. That's it, you know, and then we have to keep telling the story. 6 million people plus.
Right.
So, yeah, it's I'm gonna do my best to pass it on so that they appreciate it and they respect it. The next generations, you know, one day when I have kids, who knows?
there's something. Like I was talking to my mom before I went on this trip, and I just asked her a ton about her life and childhood because she was born in this country, and part of this adventure that we're on is learning about that, right? And I'm always fascinated with I'm totally characterizing an entire country, but I'm always fascinated that Israelis have the ability to move on, like process and move on. Like if I'm angry, we're going to talk about it. We're going to move on. If I'm sad, we're going to deal with it and move on. If I'm happy, let's party it up and wake up tomorrow and go do something else.
Yeah.
Is that an accurate statement now to someone who lives here?
What, that they do something and move on?
Yeah.
Yeah. That, I think it's more of an appreciation for life. It's like, okay, well, gotta live like there's no tomorrow. You know, it's a real appreciation for life. In comparison, again, I love you, Australia. Let's be friends. But sometimes, you know, there, for example, appreciation for life is completely different. It's a completely different sort. And when you say, yeah, it happens, move on, forgive and move on, yeah, sometimes. Sometimes it depends as well who, how you brought up, or where you brought up, it all depends. And it's all the same in every way. Israelis love to, love to party, love to have a good time. They love to complain a lot. They love to fight. They're always fighting. It's like either you fight or you defend. It's either you fight or you defend. It's like... No, you ordered it, but it's not on the menu. But so what? So the whole thing is not on the menu? No, it's not me. It's not. No, dude. Chill. It's okay.
My whole childhood has just made sense. Why when there was arguments from, you know, our dad is the most mellow guy in the world, and our mom, she's got some intensity to her. So that,
yeah,
paints a nice little picture of the toughness.
It's tough because you live in a country that keeps defending itself. It has to defend itself against everything. It has to defend itself on the internet. It has to defend itself in front of other countries. It has to defend itself on, in every single front. It has to defend itself. Defending. So when you're living, when you're born into this mentality, when you're always constantly defending yourself and someone, then it starts to put itself in your life. It's like, okay, it's okay to I understand. I got it. I got it. You don't need to defend yourself. I believe you. But it's like that. It's a shame. It's a real shame that we have to defend ourselves in every single thing. But it's the reality for now.
Well, we got some cute kids just rolling up on us right now. All right, so a couple more, and we'll get you out of here. I want to take people into Shabbat dinner. You were gracious enough to invite me and our friend Jonathan over to your home, your grandparents' home. And it's an amazing meal. It's hilarious. It's full of wisdom and stories and family, of course. And there becomes a point in the night where you open up this book of life, basically, right? And it's this picture book, as well as, you know, text that I can't read in Hebrew. And it's a story of your grandmother and then your grandfather. And as we're going through it, I don't think I'm ever going to lose the memory of your grandfather playing the piano behind us.
Yeah.
And it was like the soundtrack for the evening.
Yeah.
When I mean, you've probably been in those moments many times, but I'm curious what your thoughts were when he's playing. Because it was like this magical music, like literally in a film.
Yeah.
As we're sitting there turning the pages in their book of life, and it's and yeah, I gotta understand for people listening, these are two of the best looking people in the history of the world. Like when they meet, when they date, when they get married, you're kinda like, is this like JFK and Marilyn Monroe? Like it was perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, they're gorgeous.
Maybe that's a bad analogy, maybe
that
I should have
really
said like Jackie Kennedy or something, but go ahead.
She was like, no, my grandma's like Brigitte Bardot, they say.
She's beautiful.
That was really dramatic, Yogi. That was like super dramatic. I was like, the
it was
kind of
dramatic.
That was
though.
Freaking dramatic, man.
Was it not dramatic?
Was like, he was really good. My granddad, he plays the piano and shit. Yeah, and he's, you know.
It felt dramatic to me. No,
that's
it wasn't.
Cool. That's cool. I'll give you that.
Okay.
Okay. It was dramatic. He's got a CD in the book as well.
I know.
So
I was bummed
cool.
I didn't get a copy of that. But it was like this poignant moment, and for a guy who clearly didn't grow up in Israel. To come back to a community that, you know, I've traveled a bunch just like you have. You've been to 50 countries or so-ish. I've been to like 30 plus. And
you've been to more than me.
Well, when I get here, like, I've always felt that in traveling places can change you. India can change you.
Yeah.
Cuba, I think, changes you. Iceland changed me when I just went there.
He just keeps rubbing it in.
I did rub that one in. But Israel changes you. And I'm just kind of curious if what... You go to that dinner very, very often, maybe 2, 3, 4 times a month. Did that have any impact on you?
I 18 years, I didn't live in Israel. So for 18 years, I didn't have, I have my family at home, but we didn't really keep, you know, we did like Saturday night. When I was home, when I was there, we did Friday night dinners. But it was just my parents, my brother and my sister when we were all there. So suddenly coming to Israel, I suddenly have a family again. So it's amazing because you go and you catch up with everyone and, you know, you have your usual family crap that, you know, it's like this little argument. Who's going to clean the dishes and, who, you know, but it's fun. It's family. And then suddenly you have this support network behind you that you didn't have before because you were so far away or living somewhere else. So, yeah, it's a big impact. You also learn a lot. Learn a lot about your parents and like and why they're as they are, what happened, and then you're like, right, so maybe that's why I am like I am. You need to keep your stuff to yourself and don't put it onto your kids, parents, please. But anyway, you learn and you understand a few, you know, you understand more about your parents and you learn to encompass them more and take them in and you're like, okay, I'll be more, you have more empathy. You understand.
Yeah, I think that's something
further
that comes with age. Last time I was home, we played a game at dinner where everybody had to ask someone a question they didn't know the answer to. And it was a simple question and it turned into hours of discussion. And it was just fascinating. And I transitioned to the next phase of asking you about community because you just referenced you hadn't been in Israel in a while, right? And now you have these communities with your family. It's more than a community. It's a family, right?
Yeah.
I live in Los Angeles, which is a city of transplants. You know, a lot of people don't have family there, me included.
I thought you meant like butt transplants,
right.
But that's okay.
That exists as well. Yeah, we've got all the transplants you can dream of.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, we've got a wide array, a plethora, a buffet, if you will, to
yes.
Club Med of transplants in Los Angeles. But I feel like you've probably always cultivated community and like your own Shabbat dinners in all these countries that you lived in. Is that accurate? And where do you think that stems from? And what has that done for you as an explorer?
Shabbat dinner is very religious to me. I'm not very religious at all. I find that when I wasn't at home or when I wasn't, you know, in Australia with my family, there was not really any Shabbat dinners. Like I'd have dinner with my friends, but it wouldn't be Shabbat dinner.
Right. Okay.
I think that religion has always been something that's not negative, but not nothing that would give me something in my life. Like, okay, you hate me because I'm Jewish. Sweet. Okay. You're a dirty Jew. Okay. Sababa. Okay. So you go, you know, you're from Israel, so you kill small children. I don't know. It's religion and labels have always not been that positive in my life, so I prefer to stay away from them. So in that sense, I built the community around me, but it has nothing to do with religion. So if there was a dinner or something like that, it would always be just like with friends and you know, just a normal dinner. Now as well, the dinners are not really, in my family anyway, they're not really for Shabbat. We do it to get the family together and to feel that warmth and that support from the family to keep it together, really. But yeah, the religion side of it, I gotta be honest with you, you know, my religion is life, my church is the world, and my God is me.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And we were kind of raised in that world as well, seeing other religions, respecting them, and
yeah, I totally
believing
respect.
In love, to be quite honest. You know, to me, I think that's the language of the world, like the great book, The Alchemist, would state, right? Okay, so within that, I want to talk about your community here.
Okay.
Because I got a chance to take a look at this.
Yeah, what, the Midburn community?
Yeah, the Midburn community.
Okay.
So last night, just to give everybody an illustration,
okay.
And we might have a video of this in the blog post. We'll see.
No, oh my God.
But we roll into this amazing venue that's sold out, packed house.
Yeah.
Fight our way in. Not really. You left us tickets at the door, so thanks for that. And we get in there, and you're on the trapeze, basically, like, doing your thing. It was insane. I looked up, and I was like, that's her. And then a half hour later, you're literally eating fire and throwing it around, like, how did you get into this community? And you already talked about kind of facing your fears and kind of going for it. But where did the fire thing come from?
Well, actually, funny thing. So in Israel, the Burning Man regional event is called Midburn. And last year, the first year I came here, just after I arrived here in the beginning of May. And I think Midburn or that year was on just about May. And then after the Midburn, was finished, everyone was like, oh, Midburn, it was so amazing. And oh my God, and this. And I was like, what is this Midburn thing? I want to go. And I realized that in order to go to Midburn, you get a ticket, you also volunteered, or you had to do some kind of volunteering to be a part of it. I'm like, what a cool freaking concept. That is a cool concept, because even if I had have had a ticket anyway, I would have volunteered, because it would have meant that I would have met new people and gotten into new circles and tried new things. And you know what? That sounds like a freaking cool plan to me. So I volunteer in the Total Rehabilitation Center of Israel. And there was another girl that was volunteering with me. And she's like, oh, I'm just going to go to this guy's house tonight, and he's going to tell us about volunteering at Midburn. And I was like, oh my God. Take me with you. She's like, okay, you can come. And when I got there, it was Yakir, and Yakir is he was head of the fire tribe last year. And he's like, okay, I'm head of the fire tribe, this is what we do, and we need a communications person, like a marketing person. I'm like, well, that's what I do. I could do this and I could do that and I could do this and we could like Instagram that and we can put this in. Yeah, and we can, you know, I did this whole like marketing spill, me thinking I'm going to an interview. This is like, I'm going to freaking volunteer. Like, why am I, what? And from here to there, I found myself doing all these, you know, Facebook stuff. And he's like, okay, well, you need to, you should come to our jam. And with the jam is like a fire jam that, there's the Fire Conclave of Israel. The Fire Conclave actually started at Burning Man, and now there are different regional conclaves around the world. It was quite a small conclave of very amazing people, and so they invited me to the jams, and I sat down, and I was like, wow, this is so cool. One day, maybe. And then one day, my friend Maya, she's just like, lit up her hoop, and she's like, try this, and she just put it on me, and I just kind of shat my pants, and it was amazing, you know. And from then on, I was in love with fire, and I just and then just this community is just so incredible that they're so giving. So every time I'd go, they'd, how do you, you know, teach me a trick and teach me this and teach me that, and you just try it and you just jam every single time and learn new things.
You crushed it. I mean, I was front row and you were just flowing.
And I'm one of the like really not that good ones.
I don't know.
I'm just saying.
Well, it's impressive. I think a lot of people, before we left here, before I came over, I sent you this. I did this short doc called What Does It Mean to Be Human?
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of explored people and asked them that question. I'm going to ask you that question in a second. But preparing for this film, I went around and asked some people, what do you think of Israel? I go to Israel. And I just kind of threw the question out. And they're like, oh, be safe. Oh, man.
Yeah.
You'll be all right over there? And clearly that's just a perception of this place. But I'm curious what it's like to live here, because I think it's a fair question to ask. Do you ever feel on edge when you're here? What's it like?
I feel a lot of FOMO.
Yeah? Well, there it is.
That's a lot of FOMO, because there's so many things that go on here. There's so many cultural festivals and parties and art galleries and exhibitions and food. Oh my god, the food is insane. And bars and people, and you go to see street performers, and there's so much stuff going on. It's nonstop. So if there's anything that I feel is FOMO, it's constant FOMO. But I could seriously, like, walking around in the streets and stuff, For me, I just know. Yes, there's the old altercation of, you know, there's a, you know, someone walking in the knife and the stabbings and stuff, and that you're all aware of. But it's not any different than walking on the street of, like, I don't know, what's a city that's problematic in.
I mean, you could throw Los Angeles, Chicago.
Yeah,
I mean,
there all you these go.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think it's important to state that, because, you know, perception is at times reality, which is, you know, not always accurate.
Exactly. You could walk around. You can walk around at 3-4 o'clock in the morning in the street, and you feel that you just, there's no issue at all.
This is definitely, and we did that last night, and it's easily one of the safest cities I've ever walked in.
Yeah, dude, I can drop my phone, and someone will pick it up and run after me, and or drop it to the police station.
Right.
That's
fascinating. Okay, so
I'm touching wood now, because, you know, I'm just
we'll knock on wood. Exactly,
just knock on wood right now. It's like, shit.
All right, so we're gonna get you out of here on this last series of questions.
Okay,
so what does it mean to be human to you?
Being human is being authentic, being who you are without any masks, without anything, just being.
How do you feel about love?
Love in this full sense of love.
However you want to interpret this.
Love is encompassing. Love is giving. Love is taking. Love is all the emotions put together.
How do you feel about fear? And does that go with...
Fear is excitement.
Mm.
Fear is an adventure.
As is love.
I said love. Yeah. Lots of things.
I agree. When you have to describe someone, or if you have to describe what it means to live a full life...
Fear is useless, but sometimes it's also useful.
Okay.
Sorry, go.
Good nugget.
Another one.
Yeah. What does a full life look like to you?
A full life?
Yeah.
Is doing what you want to do when you want to do it, and with no excuses, just go and do it. You want to go and play mudcot with some dude in the beach, just go and do it. go and be like, nah, my mom, it's something with my mom, the money, and just go and do it. If you can't do it and you're complaining about it, then let's face it, you're not doing what you want to do and you're not living a full life and you're blaming outside of yourself. So get to the point where you do what you want to do because it's your life. Nobody else has to live it.
You've done a lot of really cool things in your life. I'm curious what makes you feel the most alive.
Traveling.
You think you're going to keep going?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That was a no-brainer. But you don't have the desire to, or at least right now, you don't have the, whatever it was, anxiousness to, I got to go and move somewhere.
No,
somewhere
no.
Else.
I think I found my hub. But who knows, you know, you never know what life brings. But traveling, does, you know, that'll always be there. Whether I go to live there or whether I go to only a few weeks or only a couple of days, still traveling.
American football. You are an expert now.
It's totally.
I mean.
It's like, yeah.
The pictures are out.
Hut. Hut, hut, hut.
That was an absolute blast. All right, so before we get you out of here, I ask everybody the same final question.
Okay.
How do you feel about the word limits?
Limits? Limits are really good. Sometimes. Because when you have no limits, it also creates a lot of fear. When you have no limits, you don't know where it's ending or where it's... You sort of... Sometimes that develops fears in you. Where you have your limits, you set your own limits. And then you operate to your full capacity in those limits that you set yourself. So limits need to be understood that are made by you, yourself. And they're also useful for us to, you know, keep the fear away or deal with it.
Love this.
Yeah.
You crushed this. This is a great conversation.
Oh, stop it.
Yeah, absolutely phenomenal. Okay, so we're going to say goodbye from the beach in Tel Aviv. Dolphinina, is that Dolphina?
Dolphinarium.
Dolphinarium is the beach that we are literally on right now. Be where your feet are, feet in the sand. And we may pick up part two of this from the snow.
Woo-hoo!
Think about that. All right, so we're going to do a week in Israel. We're going to explore around. We're going to play a little football. We're going to eat some good food. We're going to eat some fire or watch you
I'm going to make you eat some fire.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm going to make you eat some fire. Oh, my God. I'm going to make you eat some fire.
We'll try. We'll go for
you
it.
You are so eating fire.
All right. So that's happening. All right. All right. So we're out of here. This is the episode of Life Without Limits. Gati Cohen, we appreciate it. Thank you very much for the time.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, anytime. And as we always end this podcast with the same phrase, the only limits that you have in life.
Say hi to your mom for me.
Are the ones, hello, mom, you set yourself. Peace.